I think some of you have heard this story before, but when I first started working in a UU church as a director of religious education, I was taking time with my supervisor to plan our first worship service. And I knew that much of my traditional Christian learned language was not going to fit. I was trying to learn a new language and be sensitive to a new set of cultural norms. At one point, I turned to him and I said, So, what do you all call the front of the church? And he paused. John Marsh was about 6'5", looked down at me quizzically and said, The front of the church? I come from a tradition where we have many words for different parts of the building, and most of the time we now have dropped those, right? We don't really talk about the nave anymore. That would be where you all are sitting. Or the chancel, which would be the front of the church. Sometimes I do refer to the narthex in the back. Many people call it the foyer. But we have kept the word sanctuary to describe this room that we are in, to describe this whole room. We could call it the meeting room. Some UU congregations, that's what they call this room, the meeting room, or the worship room, or the service room, or the gathering room. But we don't. We call it the sanctuary. Because sanctuary is a place of refuge and safety. The word actually has its roots in the Latin word sanctus, or holy. The sanctuary in Catholic churches and cathedrals is actually the area around the altar in the front, around the sacristy, where holy relics might be kept, as well as consecrated communion bread. Up until something like the 1600s, the church was also a sanctuary in the sense that a fugitive could find refuge in a church and was immune to arrest. I like the story that Tina told this morning because it made me think about sanctuary in a different way. In that story, the sanctuary was movable and changeable. It was an umbrella. It protected people from the rain, and in that sense, it was a sanctuary. It provided protection. And it also was a tool to build connection and even a bit of community. The shopkeeper that originally handed the umbrella to the young girl could have said, "Bring it back to me when you're done." And he could have done that not to be selfish, but he could have done that so that he could make sure it was given to somebody else who needed it, so that he could keep on sharing the sanctuary. In that way, he would have been providing sanctuary, but he would have been at the center of that, right? Like an axle is the center of the spokes. But instead, he trusted her and told her, just give the umbrella to the next person who needs it. She, in turn, could have given it to someone and then said, well, return it to me when you're done, so that she could continue giving it to people and thereby making herself the center. But she did not. Instead, she learned from the shopkeeper and passed on the umbrella, that portable sanctuary, and said, just make sure you share it with the next person who needs it. In that way, not only were people provided a sanctuary from the rain, but they also became part of a community. And did you notice at the end of the story that everybody in the town would carry an umbrella and knew the words and how to care for one another? In the story, there came to be a network of interconnected folks who found protection under umbrellas. In the story, the umbrella, the sanctuary, came to them, and it created connection and a network because the instructions were to pass it on. The umbrella was a sanctuary in that story, and so were the connected human beings a sanctuary in that story. In the Middle Ages, the church sanctuary was a place you went to. I think that probably made a lot of sense back then. In a world where nature was dangerous and countries were often at war and safety was hard to find, it was good to know where in the center of town you could go to when you needed to hide, when shelter was important. But maybe that hiding isn't so necessary anymore. Now, I know that for some of you, this room is not a sanctuary. For some of you, it's a great place and you like coming here on Sunday, but your true sanctuary is elsewhere. It is found in the out of doors, among trees and brooks and lakes, being in nature, watching seasons change, or it may be in a book, or many books, or it could be in your family or in creating art. Sanctuary does not need to be the same for all of us. I know that this room, which is so meaningful for many, is also one of many sanctuaries that folks have in this community. And that's okay. I don't think we need to corner the market on sanctuary in the same way the church in the Middle Ages might have done it. Parker Palmer described sanctuary or his experience of it this way. Sanctuary is wherever I find space to regain my bearings, reclaim my soul, heal my wounds, and return to the world as a wounded healer. It's not merely about finding shelter from the storm. It's about spiritual survival. Today, seeking sanctuary is no more optional for me than church attendance was as a child. Note that Parker Palmer does not say sanctuary is for hiding in. It is a safe place to reclaim our souls, to heal our wounds. And note that he does not say we will be made new as if we had never been wounded, but rather we will return to the world as a wounded healer. We return to the world because that is where the work is, and the sanctuary gives us a place to rest and recreate ourselves, to restore ourselves so that we can return to the work. Parker goes on to describe how we live in an incredibly violent society and people respond differently to that violence and how to deal with it. Clearly, the past few weeks have shown us how violent the world is. Honestly, I don't know if the world is any more violent now than it was in the past, especially in the Middle Ages. But I think maybe that comparison is not necessary. The world is more violent than it should be. And it is more violent than is good for this earth or for us humans. As Parker said also, we come up against our helplessness, the inability to stop loved ones from dying or turn our children from paths of self-destruction or from those we love from breaking our hearts. And we find ourselves asking, is there any source of help beyond my own strength? Is there anything I can trust beyond our power to make it right? That question has been on my heart these past weeks, these past 2 years. What can I trust beyond my own power? What can I trust? I hear others asking this question also. My answer is sanctuary, but not as a hiding place, but as a place of community where you and I can rest if we need, we can connect with others if we need, a place where we can be welcomed in all that we are. What a sanctuary that is for you to be welcomed in all that you are. And all of you, all of us, are madly imperfect. And I know that. So when I say you are welcome in all that you are, I know there are like 67 sets of problems out here. I'm saying you're all welcome. I'd like you to invite you to look inward for a moment. Find a comfortable position. Feel the floor, feel the chair you are in. Breathe deeply. Think of a time when you felt a profound sense of welcome. Hold that experience in your mind and consider whether the space you were in or the interaction you had was changed because you were there. What effect did your presence have? Stay present and consider what it felt like in your body to experience that welcome. What was that effect that it had on you? And if you've never had an experience like this, or if you can't think of one, Imagine what it might feel like to have a profound sense of welcome. Now imagine what it would feel like to feel that way, that full and total welcome, that belonging every time you entered this space. And better yet, imagine what it would be like to know with every fiber of your being that that sense of welcome and belonging was unconditional, that there was nothing about you, no part of you, whether worn on your sleeve or hidden deep inside, that would make you unworthy of welcome, of belonging, or of love. Do you know what I mean when I ask you to imagine being free from that sense that there is something about you that is inherently wrong or bad or simply enormously different? Come back from that place of welcome. Come into this place of welcome. In all that we try to do, we try to be a place of welcome, of practicing radical hospitality, and in that we are a sanctuary. And we have been an officially welcoming church since 1995, I think, and for those of you who are visitors in the Unitarian Universalist Association, being a welcoming congregation means that we welcome all people, no matter what their sexual orientation is, no matter what their gender identity is, no matter what their family structure is, we welcome all people. Now, some of us practice this kind of welcoming because we are just friendly folk. And some of us practice it because we know that there are so many unwelcoming and unsafe places in the world. We offer that sanctuary here in this room, in this gathering, in our coffee hour, in our potlucks, and our soup dinners. We offer this kind of sanctuary in our senior high youth group. You know, it's not normal for the senior high kids to still come up front for the story. But they know it's okay. They're welcome. We offer that kind of welcome in our junior high youth group and our children's education classes. We offer this kind of sanctuary in our choir. Welcoming all may seem like business as usual to us, but it is not. This kind of radical sanctuary will and does change the world. The welcome that we offer people is not simply friendly. It is countercultural. It is countercultural. When you think about what it takes for any of you to go out in that world and do what you do and fight the fights that you fight, to come into a place where people say, "It is great to see you in all your quirkiness." Perhaps you have heard this story. One day an old man was walking along the beach. It was low tide and the sand was littered with hundreds of thousands of stranded starfish that the water had carried in and left on the beach. The man began walking very carefully so as not to step on any of the beautiful creatures. Since the animals still seemed to be alive, he considered picking some of them up and putting them back in the water where they could resume their lives. The man knew the starfish would die if left on the beach dry sand, but he reasoned he couldn't possibly help them all, and so he chose to do nothing and continued walking. Soon afterward, the man came upon a small child on the beach who was frantically throwing starfish after starfish back into the sea. The old man stopped and asked the child, "What are you doing?" "Well, I'm saving starfish," the child replied. "Why waste your time? There are so many. You can't save them all, so what does it matter?" argued the man. Without hesitation, the child picked up another starfish and tossed it back into the water. "It matters to that one," said the child. I am fully aware that the love in this community will not save the whole world. It alone will not change the tide of history. It alone will not stop the violence in the streets of Syracuse. And as hard as that is to know, I also know that that is okay. It is the way the world is. It is better for us to be a radically welcoming community, even if we only save one person, than to not try at all. Our welcome, our radical welcome, makes us a sanctuary, and that matters. In a world without end, may this be so.